Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
He's a gorilla of destiny, a Bullet Club OG, continuing on the legacy of the most feared name in all of wrestling. From Tonga to Japan to America, you are now entering Tama's Island with your host, the babyface heel, Tama Tonga.
Guys, we are back on Tama's Island podcast this week. We got some things to talk about, some funny stuff. We just, before we came on, we were just laughing. I wish we got this on the podcast already, but I think we'll spill it over. Welcome back to Tama's Island Podcast. I'm your host, Tama Tonga, with my man, co-host, Ross Berman, the CV, Culture Vulture, or the Folk City Hustler, I'm the, FH.
I'm the Culture Vulture, I'm the Folk City Hustler, I'm the Disruptor. I have like eight different nicknames at this point.
I like that.
I'm just collecting them.
the Disruptor. So that's like equalizer term, the equalizer, yep. The Disruptor. And we got a special guest here from Tama's Island. Marie Shadows, how are you? Welcome to the podcast. Are you ready to talk some shit?
I am ready to talk some shit, always.
Hell yeah.
Awesome. Always. Awesome. Well, we're happy to have you here with us. Let's talk, Ross. I know you got some news from the wrestling. There's some shit that's controversial that's went down with
it.
I'll let you continue that.
It this past Thursday, we'll just start off with the biggest news of the wrestling world. It's easily the news with the most fallout. This past Thursday, Dark Side of the Ring aired an episode about the infamous plane ride from hell. Now, many wrestling fans are aware of the plane ride from hell. It is the fodder of nearly thousands of shoot interviews. It is the kind of thing of drunk wrestler legend. The story of the entire WWE roster on this transatlantic flight from, I believe it's Europe all the way to North America, completing a long, brutal European tour. They end up with a several hour stranded on the tarmac. And so during that kind of layover that they have, everyone starts drinking. According to the flight attendant that was interviewed, three bar carts were emptied before they even took off, and they just kind of kept getting these bar carts brought back on the plane. And then when it took off, it sounds like it was a complete nightmare. Now, like I've said, this is the kind of story that's been told a lot by onlookers, people that were on the plane, wrestlers who may have been involved or witnessed things that happened on the plane. But this week's Dark Side of the Ring had the added perspective of one of the flight attendants from the plane ride from hell. In fact, one of the flight attendants that Ric Flair, the Nature Boy, exposed himself to and was apparently very, I think the term they're asking to use is aggressive. Like it's very much a case of where sexual harassment borders on sexual abuse. And so it definitely took a dark turn, and it made people kind of re-examine some of these wrestling legends that they have in their mind. Because Ric Flair's, you know, freeness with his member is not exactly not a secret. It's the kind of thing that has been a part of WWE Storytime. His ESPN 30 for 30 was a part of it. Even in his autobiography, he talks about doing the infamous helicopter, as he calls it, which is, I'll spare you the gory details, but I think that name paints enough of an image as it is.
It hasn't been painted. Explain it to us.
Normally a helicopter has two blades, but imagine in this case, there's just one blade. I kid. It's made people reexamine the way that they look at Ric Flair. He's already, apparently his sponsorship with Car Shield has been paused. But Ric Flair is not the only person from the Plane Ride from Hell documentary that's catching a little bit of flack, because in the course of this documentary, they not only had folks that were, they not only had the flight attendant, but they also had folks like Justin Credible, who was on the plane, Rob Van Dam, who was on the plane, and Tommy Dreamer, who decided to not only give his thoughts on what happened on the flight, but to, towards the end of the episode, also give his opinion about how serious he felt the flight attendant's allegations are against Ric Flair. He, in fact, he compared the offense that people would take over his comments about sexual abuse, in which he said that if she really felt that bad, she should have taken it to the fullest extent of the law, which ignores the way that the law tends to ignore cases of sexual abuse. So the law isn't going to necessarily help her there. But that's not the point. The point is Tommy Dreamer felt that he could somehow, I don't know, play lawyer for Ric Flair during this Dark Side of the Ring interview. And in doing so, when he was brought in to really just be local color, to just be the kind of guy that, you know, has some stray observations about what happened, he ended up burning down his career to the point where he has numerous bookings that have been pulled right now. He has been suspended from Impact Wrestling. And in general, him and Flair have become kind of persona non grata. Now, Flair, we kind of knew this was coming, because if you talk about the plane ride from hell, you have to talk about Flair. But with Dreamer, this was really a case of just shooting yourself in the foot to make a show of yourself. Like, he did not have to, he could have just said what happened on the plane. He didn't have to go into his thoughts about what abuse victims should do. And yet he decided to, and that is put him in some real hot water. It's a tricky conversation, because it's very serious allegations against Ric Flair. The topic matter is very serious, but the way that both of them have handled it is so incompetent that it's funny. The way that Dreamer has handled, first in the episode where he says that I've probably offended people saying that abuse victims should go to the law, but I'm probably also offending people with my hairdo, which, when you compare your ponytail, the offense of your ponytail to the offense of your thoughts about sexual assault victims, it's not even apples and oranges. You're talking about an apple and a rock being thrown at someone. Like, these are two very different things. Damn. And so, he then did your boilerplate notes apology of, I'm sorry to the people I've offended. I'm not actually sorry, I'm just sorry if you got offended, which, if anyone's out there taking notes, doesn't count as an apology. It just counts as saying, oh, some people were offended. You have to take full responsibility, whether they were offended or not, for your actions. Look deepward, look inward, return to the town humbled, that kind of thing. Dreamer did not want to do this, and now he has been suspended from Impact Wrestling. But his response wasn't the only terrible response that has been released over the past, what is it? It's been almost half a week since the episode has come out, and the fallout still keeps coming. Because you see, like I mentioned earlier, the 30 for 30 documentary with Ric Flair, in which the helicopter is mentioned, in which the plane ride from hell is mentioned, the director recently came out and said, you know, that Ric's history with women is problematic. It's an issue. He really just kind of, it feels, don't get me wrong, I think he says some very important things, but it's very much him covering his ass for the way the 30 for 30 came off, because they treat the plane ride from hell like this joke, and now Dark Side of the Ring has shown the dark side of that joke. And so, it's true. No, this is the first Dark Side of the Ring episode with consequences. But Ric Flair decided to jump on director Rory Kampf's comments and saying, Rory is always lying. And he opened the statement with, my lawyer told me not to post this. My publicist told me not to post this. My wife told me not to post this, but post this I shall. He then deleted that response to post basically the same response with some formatting things changed and his like lawyer and his wife being pulled out of it. Like, he still goes on the whole thing of everyone's lying. I'm okay. I'm the good guy here. But it's flabbergasting, because, yes, I understand Ric Flair is not going to be an optics guy. He's not going to be a good social media guy. But in the words of Mike Birbiglia, what you should have said was nothing, just nothing. Don't tweet through it. Just go away for a little bit and then see what the fallout happens. But nope, tweet
Nobody
through it.
Nobody tells Ric Flair what to do.
Exactly. Nobody. No, as we learned at the NWA 73rd, no one tells Ric Flair what to do. But it's been an avalanche, for lack of a better term, it's been an avalanche of nonsense since this Dark Side of the Ring episode came out, of just people either stepping on their toes, defending people stepping on their toes, or outright shooting their toes off in some cases. Marie, you're obviously following this as well. What have you kind of what's your response to the way that this whole Dark Side of the Ring snowball has come about?
Well, first I'm going to say that I'm not the same girl as everyone else. I think a little bit different when it comes to this business. I've heard all the shoot interviews for like Ric Flair and all that. So, you know, if your colleague has to keep saying he's the dirtiest player in the game multiple times and don't switch that up, you know, some shit goes down. Like you automatically know something's going to happen. If you stay there with them just to hang out and see what happens, whether or not that's like taken to an extent where it's like, it's a crime. I don't know. I'm not there.
Yep.
But according to the Dark Side of the Ring and how everything was planned, first of all, before he disrobes everything, they had that fight between Lesnar and Mr. Perfect.
Yep. So
everybody is afraid and everyone's like, oh my God, we didn't die. We're okay. Yep. And then, you know, to just want to be naked, why couldn't you tell a joke? Like, why did you need, like, I don't understand the need for, like, getting naked and being like, look what I have. Fantastic. No, great.
I'm with you. I've provided hours upon hours of laughs on this podcast. And you both can attest. I have never taken my Johnson out once. I've never had to get naked to get a laugh.
Ross doesn't know, but I have.
Look, everyone's recorded a podcast with no pants on. I will admit that. But I'm just saying there was a professional error that was kept. But no, you bring up a good point, because as we're talking about this 30 for 30 doc, I remember when the ESPN documentary came out. And it was kind of a sad, harrowing portrait of a struggling alcoholic being like, alcohol has destroyed my life. Overspending has destroyed my life. And the response to it from the fans was mainly like, man, Rick's the dude, isn't he? Like, he's partying, he's spending, he's living that life. And the entire time, like, what world are we living in where we can watch this man cry over all of his broken dreams and broken promises to go, yeah, that's the nature boy right there. Like it's been long overdue, this kind of reckoning with the persona versus the person.
Man, Ric Flair living that Instagram life way before Instagram came out. Shit, dude. He's like that damn, that, what's his name? Dan.
I have no idea. I'm.
He's the dude that just found out. He's like, he was like this, not a playboy, but he had a girl surrounding him all the time on Instagram, and that was his post. And then Dan Blitz.
I don't know, man. I was gonna go with like Playboy bunnies and like Playboy. No,
Can
I talk about Hefner?
No, but that's exactly, you bring up a great point. Hefner is a great example of someone else who would just wander around in a robe, and we all pretended it was okay. Like, yes, Ric Flair wrestles in the robe, and there is a time for that. But then when it's the stories of him being backstage, that's when it starts to get, you know, their lines.
His name is Dan Bilzerian. Do you know who that is?
No.
Oh, Dan Bilzerian. Okay, yes, Bilzerian. I do know that.
There you go. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, anyways, back. Hey, back. Let's go back to Ric Flair living the Instagram life. Let's go.
Yep. No, but you're not wrong. He was sliding into the DMs before the DMs were a thing. And so, but now, and it's, I think the, not only is Rick's being held accountable an important part of this, but the way that people are holding Tommy Dreamer accountable, because ultimately what Dreamer represents in this documentary isn't, it's the kind of culture that has allowed people like Ric Flair to thrive, despite the fact that he has created a lot of problems for people over time. You know, there are, it is this. It's like it was with the speaking out movement in 2020. It does feel like there is this reckoning with how much manipulation are wrestling fans willing to put up with before we eventually say no more. Because there is a level of, you know, manipulation that works in the wrestling business. You know, you gotta be able to make people believe, but then there's a level of manipulation that's just kind of covering people's asses. And that seems to be the level that people have finally said no more to. That is definitely, it's going to be an interesting time. Again, shout out to everyone involved in Dark Side of the Ring, because like I said, this week was the first week. Like, usually there are episodes that have like a t-shirt will come out, or someone will be like, oh, the woman that raised Brian Pillman, man, she really is a saint, that kind of stuff. But this was the first one where there are straight up consequences. A third person we haven't brought up is J.R. Jim Ross, who he kind of takes more ownership of it than I think anyone else in the documentary, because he's the head of talent relations at the time. He really does kind of say that it was his job to keep people in check, and he didn't keep people in check. And so he, I think, brings the, but it's a different side of JR, because I feel like even if you listen to his podcast, you don't necessarily always see the consigliere side of JR, the side of JR that says, look, I don't condone what happened on the plane ride from hell. It was my job to stop it, and I didn't. And should there have been, he kind of gives that Irishman response of, should there have been more consequences? It's what it is. You can't really, you know, there's no way to put the genie back in the bottle, so to speak. Again, shout out to everyone involved in that episode who really made a deep piece of deep hour of television.
I would like to add something too that
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The company that Heidi worked for should have at least smartened up like the stewardess, and even maybe have some male stewardess on there too, if they're going to deal with wrestlers. Because the documentary does start off with she saying that she used to do that same thing with like basketball players and soccer players. You're not going to get that wild with basketball players or soccer players as you would with wrestlers back in the day. So it's like, you know, they should have at least let them know, hey, you know, it's probably going to get crazy. We should, you know, I guess prepare for like maybe the worst.
Well,
but I would blame like the airplane company for that.
Yeah. Like my stance is whoever kept adding bar carts to the plane during, because they have the 7-hour layover where they say they emptied a bar cart. So they ordered another bar cart that was brought onto the plane. They emptied that bar cart, and then another bar cart was brought. And so there is, at some point, it is kind of on the company to like say, like, I bartended for a few months. You have to cut someone off eventually. At some point you say, no, I can't serve you anymore. But when you're trapped, especially in a plane where like you're either trapped on the ground in this tube or you're trapped thousands of feet up in the air in a tube, like it adds that level of, I can't escape. I can't just, you know, I can't just create a confrontation, or else you end up with stuff like happened with Lesnar and Mr. Perfect, where they almost break open the emergency exit, having a wrestling match in the exit row. Like it does sound. And then we haven't even gotten into Dustin Rhodes taking over the intercom to try and win back his wife and using the backseat compartment as a spittoon. Like this was outside of Ric Flair, this was still a giant mess. And then when you add this volatile situation like Ric Flair to it, it creates, like I said, it creates fodder for interview after interview after interview. And I
sounds again, like a hell of an episode of Raw on there back in the day.
Huh? Right. Like, and that's the thing is like, this is, this also apparently happened like right, like when they landed, the next WWE show was going to be the first show where they're WWE and not WWF. And so they're also going through this big ass transition where I'm sure like that's the other, because like
they're,
we keep saying
old behind.
Exactly. Where it's like people are like, well, what was Vince doing during the plane ride from hell? I'm like, I don't know, he's trying to figure out if his company is still gonna be able to work with the new, like he's literally about to change everything about his company for the first time in 30 years. I think the last thing he's wondering about is, are my wrestlers too drunk? Like it was the 2000s. They were all hammered all the time from what I have heard on the interviews. I'm not gonna sit here and pretend I was there, but from what I've heard, it was a dusty locker room. But yes, so Dark Side of the Ring definitely kicking off last week with kicking off a new season with a lot of craziness, with a lot of fallout. But that, I mean, that's not the only news that's going on in the wrestling world right now. I wish we had more to talk about. Like I said, they paused the Ric Flair Car Shield commercials. And they're still already airing, so I don't know
I'm reading here in the chat, on the Twitch chat, that they've also taken his merch offline. I figured they would have. Damn.
Oh yeah, no.
I figured they took that off when he let go, but then again, you know, that wouldn't happen because they're still trying to make money off him. No matter what. So but.
They still have Charlotte using a lot of his IP. Like even if they can't say Ric Flair, they still got the woos, they still got the chops, they still got a lot of his fingerprints on the company. And it also kind of feels like, based on the way that Andrade was getting rid of Chavo Guerrero last week on AEW, it's entirely possible Rick was slated to go into AEW at some point in the next like month or so. Like, I don't know if that's still, I doubt that's still going to happen now, but it did feel like they were setting up that Ric Flair in Andrade's corner thing. I don't see that happening anymore. I mean, maybe Tony Khan's willing to burn a lot of goodwill, but he's seemed smarter than that so far, especially heading into Queens and the big shows that they've got coming up. But yeah, it's been a wild week in North America, because not only did we get the Dark Side of the Ring, but NXT has been rebooted officially. We now are living 2.0. in a NXT 2.0, the third iteration, second version. It's bright, it's colorful, it's definitely different. Like it really does kind of feel like the old like episodes of like Raw, where they would like tape 3 weeks in Poughkeepsie, and like it's mainly very short matches with a lot of talking. They're really upping the characters. They got like a Chicago mobster that's going to debut. Hit Row is all over the place. Like they're definitely leaning into that. It looks more like the main roster. That's the best way to put it. Like, it feels more like the main roster. It looks more like the main roster, just with faces that, you know, if you haven't been watching NXT for a while, you've never seen before. You got guys like Von Wagner inserted in the NXT title match. You got guys like Braun Breaker. A lot of ons, but a lot of second generation, third generation talent kind of coming into NXT. Like it does kind of have that next generation of the pro wrestling world vibe that maybe the old NXT didn't quite have. I don't know, you're nodding your head, Tom. What did you kind of think of the refresh?
I'm with you. It does feel refreshing. It does look like, I feel like there's this next like new blood coming through, and I liked it. I liked the 2.0. I like the look. It is refreshing. It is kind of a little brighter, it seems a little bit more fun, you know, and now I tuned in and I caught some of it. I saw the way that everybody was seated all around the building. You can see their legs, their feet. They have like a closed off, like what's it called? Like a wall, you know, they have like that.
Yeah. They got rid of the plexiglass. They got rid of the chain link. It's got more of like it's more theater in the round than like, I don't know. The old one, it felt very like Rollerball, like very like, this is the dystopian future. Everyone plays one sport. The winner gets bread.
It felt like more of a Thunderdome than the Thunderdome that they had last year.
Exactly. And now it feels a little bit more like a WWE product. It feels a little bit more like that sports entertainment vibe. And I'm going to, you know, I will probably burn some goodwill with people, but I loved the wedding. The wedding was the Indy Hartwell Dexter Lumis wedding was fantastic. It was a really a hilarious way to end the show. And I'm happy no one ruined it. Like I'm liking this current trend of like contract signings happening without someone going through a table, weddings happening and actually concluding. Like it really does make me invest a little bit more in the characters when you get that. In music, we call it a tonic chord. When you get that resolution to a story, when you, instead of just constantly moving them on to the next thing. I'm interested to see where they go. They still have plenty of time for it to go off a cliff. There are already reports that they want it to be edgier, whatever the hell that means in 2021.
It feels to me that it's like the whole wedding and everything. Does it feel like it's just another Raw product? Like it's a smaller version of Raw?
Yep.
Like it's a little brother of Raw. That's to me, there's no... What's the difference between these two? Except it's just a younger generation
I almost feel like that's kind of what NXT should have been, because like they worked so hard to make it this third brand that like I feel like so many people were matched to the aesthetic of NXT that like then when you take them out of NXT and you put them in Raw or SmackDown, It's very jarring because you're used to seeing them in this dark environment. You're used to, you know, there are shadows where you can hide stuff. There's just, it's a different vibe. And so now that NXT has that main roster vibe a little bit more, it's going to be easier to see Braun Breaker on SmackDown because the NXT looks just enough like SmackDown that when he shows up there, it will feel like, it'll feel a little bit more in peace with what the show is than like this guy from like what weirdly felt like the rival promotion showing up to like invade, you know, like it doesn't, yeah. NXT doesn't feel like an invasion of WWE anymore. It feels like a part of it. I don't know.
Like, okay, I'm just going to go off the cliff here real quick.
Do it.
But right. So this whole change to NXT was Triple H's baby. Look, now with this, all this changes and everything. Now I'm just saying this and I'm just, but it felt like, with all these changes that they did to NXT, it kind of like sent Triple H off the cliff somewhere and gave him a damn heart attack. No, I'm just saying that.
Yeah.
I don't mean any harm on anybody.
No.
But I mean, I felt it feels like that.
He was hurt. Literally, yeah. Here, it broke his heart. when they told him they're going to sideline him and redo all of NXT, his baby. I'm sorry, Triple H. You know, I'm sorry, dog. But
I will jump in as the journalist here. I do have to bring up Triple H had a genetic heart condition. This is not something that
that's like, what I would tell the news too.
No, it's not something that suddenly formed. But I do agree that like the optics are so bad that like Triple H goes into the hospital and it's like Vince and Bruce just march into the performance center like, all right, he's gone. Let's make some changes. You know, like I don't feel like the changes to NXT gave Triple H the event, but I feel like the cardiac event gave them all of the room to be like, all right,
I think it was the opposite. I think Vince marched up in there and said, we're gonna do this, we're gonna change, and we're gonna fire all these guys without telling Triple H. And then Triple H had this whole deal and then went to the hospital and they're like, oh, he had a genetic mutation. He's been there for his whole life. We're gonna anyway, NXT is gonna be 2.0, we're gonna do all this.
I'm siding with Tama on this one.
Yeah.
It makes sense. And I'm waiting for Triple H to put in his 2 weeks.
That ain't happening.
He ain't
coming off the tit. No.
at the rate him and Stephanie keep selling stock, it's very possible. Like that,
yeah,
I feel like
happening.
Yeah, no. There is part of me that loves chaos that would just love for Triple H to say, screw it, I want to go see, like, cause like I think about the professional wrestling landscape as it is. Could you imagine if Jeff Jarrett and Triple H decided to break off on their own? Like that could technically happen someday, somewhere down the line, if Triple H decides to strike off on his own. But like it does.
Look, I'm not gonna lie to you. Okay, yep. let's keep it 100 here. Yep. With your reputation, I don't know how far you'd go. But you know, so let me and another thing. Here's another thing that could be like, right into Triple H to cause him to go to hospital. Like, do you see who's running it? Who was still in the show? Shawn Michaels was still the one running the show.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine. Something that you invested 10 years of your time. Is it 10 years, 8 years, whatever it is. You spent a lot of your time investing, gathering all these troops coming to work for you. You built this whole brand, vision, everything, image. And then your best friend, your TV best friend comes in and takes over with a boss with your father-in-law. Damn, that's like one hit after the other. I would go to the hospital too. Shit.
Let's be real. If we're gonna look at wrestling in the big picture, it's kind of return to form, because like this was the mid '90s when Vince McMahon's golden boy was Shawn Michaels, and Triple H was kind of just off on the sidelines, and Triple H did a good job of kind of getting close to Vince, and you know, I obviously he's his son-in-law, so he's gonna be very close to him, but it does kind of feel like that. And I don't like to rampantly speculate like this, but it really does. I don't know whose serial Triple H pissed in the past like year.
Everybody's.
But the only two things that like could make any sense to the way that this has been handled is either they're really pissed that Triple H lost the ratings war, or Triple H cheated. Like I don't, there is it, he it's gone too deep for this to just be like, well, we didn't really like the way NXT was going. Like, it feels like they're cutting so deep, and I don't know. It's it can only get weirder, right? Like, that's the way the wrestling world's going right now. It can only get weirder, especially if AEW, like, AEW apparently just turned a profit, according to Tony Khan, so they are no longer in the red from their video game investment.
Good for you, AEW. Good for you, Tony Khan.
They just opened up more tickets for Queens, which means they're looking at a possibly 20,000 person show on Wednesday. And then next year, their new TNT deal kicks, or their new Warner deal kicks in, which means that Dynamite will be on TBS, Rampage will be on TNT. They get a hefty pay raise from the networks, and they also get four extra shows on TNT per year. So, like, they're just starting their momentum for 2022 right now.
Oh, and also the Owen Hart Foundation, they partner up with them too.
Yep. And that's a big coup right there. The AEW will be having some kind of tournament to honor Owen Hart. Owen Hart is now being treated as a legend of professional wrestling, like a lot of fans have always wanted. And now that there is a promotion that can, you know, treat his legacy well without necessarily profiting off the fact that he died in their ring, it really does feel like a balance is kind of being restored. Like, there was something very cosmic about that Owen Hart, Martha Hart, AEW news. I'm really, really excited to see how this is going to shake out. What did you kind of think, Tom, of that announcement about Owen Hart and AEW, the legacy of Owen Hart being kind of taken up by AEW?
Not much. Didn't think much of it. I'm just now, like, I saw it on Twitter. Was it yesterday morning? I haven't really put it all together up here. Maybe Marie's got a better answer for that, because I'm still,
hell yeah,
not there.
I mean, as far as I know, they're gonna have that tournament. I think they're presenting like a trophy at the end of it. They haven't had like much details of, like, you know, who's gonna be in the tournament, like the rules and everything, and when it's gonna play out. I do know they were talking about having a toy line, so that way they could have Owen action figures and stuff. And then obviously on Twitter, it's the same old war between AEW and WWE fans, and I'm like, guys, at least AEW is doing something. WWE has Owen Hart like buried at the bottom of their foot. They haven't done shit with it. So, like, you know, be happy that AEW is doing something with like a legacy like Owen Hart and like the Hart Foundation.
Well, and let's be real about this. The Hart family is older than WWE. Like, that's the kind of, I think that's the real coup here, is like WWE has always been big on getting the history, right? Like, they've got WCW, they've got... they technically have the Hart family because of how much they've worked for them. But WWE's never actually owned the Hart family, because the Hart family, I mean, they had Stampede Wrestling. They were, hey, hell, Stu Hart was practically a business partner of Vince Sr. for a while. And so it does kind of feel like there are a lot of those old totems of the past being kind of taken back by the professional wrestling world, so that the WWE doesn't necessarily have their foot on the history the way that they used to.
Did WWE do a lot for Owen? Like, I don't know a lot what was done after his death. Was there like, no. I know that, you know, I've only seen through Dark Side of the Ring what the Owen Hart Foundation and stuff. I'm not deep in that knowledge.
Well, because part of the point of the Owen Hart Foundation was Martha Hart refused to let WWE profit off of Owen Hart's legacy, because that's essentially what would happen if he gets to go in the video games, if they get to sell T-shirts. Like, yes, Martha Hart will get a little bit of that money, but a lot of that money is going to go to WWE. A lot of that's going to be network subscriptions. A lot of that's going to be video game sales. And so she did, and especially since she has a court saying that WWE was negligent in Owen Hart's death, it would just be too much of a, as I think as it was his kid in the Dark Side of the Ring said, it would be too much of a victory for them to say that they got him. And so Martha Hart has been kind of holding off for a very long time. A lot of wrestling fans, even Bret Hart, like, does not talk that highly of Martha, because he really wants Owen in the WWE. He wants Owen to be that WWE legend that I think a lot of people see him as. And now we're at the point where there is a company out there that can take up Owen's mantle, that can, you know, obviously they have a partnership with the Owen Hart Foundation. And so it's not going to be the profit sharing that she would have had to do with WWE. It does kind of feel like Martha Hart and the Owen Hart Foundation are going to be central in the way that Owen's legacy is handled. And that's all she's really ever asked for. Like I said on Twitter, she won. She got to the point where someone can take up that legacy and she can stop fighting so hard. Because mm-hmm. I can only imagine how exhausting it has been to be Martha Hart for the past, what are we? We're at like nearly 20 years since her husband died. And especially with the explosion of social media, with the explosion of people being able to just watch his work in on the internet, free from context, free from the context of his death, from the context of the suit, it has created this second generation of Owen Hart fans that don't necessarily understand all of the reasons that Martha doesn't want Owen in the WWE Hall of Fame, why she doesn't want WWE to have that legacy. And so now to see that between the Dark Side of the Ring episode and between what AEW is going to be able to do with Owens, with all of the rights that she's kind of signed over, is you'll finally be able to get that education on who Owen Hart was. Because I feel like the WWE narrative for so long has been he was Bret's little brother, and he was so good that that's almost a pejorative. Like, and that feels like the tip of the iceberg on who Owen Hart was, if just based on what I've heard. Mm-hmm. I didn't know the guy. I was 9 when he passed away. But it sounds like he was a much more complex figure than WWE would have you believe. And I'm excited to see that fleshed out.
Good. Hey, good for AEW. Good for the Hart family. And I'm glad that they're doing something for that. I don't know a lot of information, but from what you guys are saying, shoot. Okay.
And that's probably the healthy way to look at it. We'll see where this goes because it's still very early. We don't know what the plans for the tournament are. We don't know what the trophy is going to look like. We don't know a lot of the details. We just know that much like Daniel Bryan has said, much like guys like Tommy End have said, it sounds like this was another case where the handling of Brody Lee's illness and death was another thing that kind of made another person in the wrestling industry say this is a company that cares about their roster, whether they be with them or without them. This is a company that can keep a secret. This is a company that can, you know, really seems to have the right priorities when it comes to a lot of things. And so it does bode well. It also, it fuels speculation that guys like Kevin Owens, whose last name is a tribute to Owen Hart, whose son is named after Owen Hart. It leads to that speculation that he might head over to AEW if it means that he actually gets to, you know,
I didn't know he dedicated his son.
His son is named after Owen Hart, and that's why when he couldn't be Kevin Steen anymore, he became Kevin Owens, because that it was a tribute to his son. It's a tribute to Owen Hart. It was a tribute to two birds with one stone, so to say. But it definitely raises a lot of interesting opportunities for folks. So that's some very good news for AEW. The shows that are coming up in Arthur Ashe Stadium sound like they're going to be huge. Like I said, they just released some more tickets now that they know where all the production is going to end up. So if you want to snag a last minute ticket, go for it. But and not only did AEW have a big week, New Japan Strong came back with the first episode with fans taped in front of, you had Hiroshi Tanahashi, you had Tomohiro Ishii, you had your brother Hikuleo, spoiler alert to anyone who hasn't watched it yet, kicked Juice Robinson's ass in a tables match. And so it does kind of feel like a new day for the New Japan Strong brand. I've been saying it, once you get fans in there, it becomes the wrestler's wrestling show. And now, I don't know, after that first week, That's starting to be pretty true, but New Japan Strong, not only the only big stuff happening in New Japan Pro Wrestling right now, we got to talk about it, Tama.
First, let's talk about
the first two nights of the 31st G1 Climax have come and gone. You made your first appearance in the G1 in a number of years, and it damned if it wasn't a hell of a show. And you and Sonata had a barn burner of a match. I will say, spoiler to anyone out there, Sonata did sneak out the win, but you made it real hard on him. He couldn't get you down for the moonsault. He couldn't get you down for the skull end. He had to roll you up like some sneak thief. So
some dumb LIJ type shit he would do.
But I mean, especially considering how few singles matches you've had over the past like few years, how did it feel to kind of like get back, really kind of trial by fire, jump in there with Sonata in the G1? How did that match feel?
Uh, Oof. Oh, man. To be honest, I was ready for it. I felt I felt these past, you know, 3 years that I've taken off has really prepared me to get back in and not miss a step. Mm-hmm. But it felt great being the singles, and we've talked about it on Thomas Island. I've been preparing myself these past this whole year to get back as a singles competitor. And man, I think Sonata was the perfect guy to get back in, because that's one guy that I've always had. I was always confident with our skills together. We have great chemistry together, man. And I know I shit on Sonata a lot. Well deserved. But it, you know, to be frank, man, we have this, like, our styles are very similar. He's like the Japanese version, I'm the American version, but with very similar styles. And it's easy to mesh with somebody like that. It's easy to work with somebody like that. And I'm going to go ahead and, like, you know, we're going to dive a little deep into it, because that's a guy that I always say that he's missing something. There's something. Yep. He's not, you know, with another, you know, and now that he's teamed up with another guy that we'll be talking here soon, we felt like he kind of fell to the back a little bit behind this guy. But to be honest, after having that match with him at the G1, I feel like I'm the guy that can bring that out of Sonata. I feel like I'm the guy that can press that button and know how to unlock that vault and bring out the Sonata that needs to be brought out. I truly, truly feel that. And after that's after this match, I know that. I know that now. And man, I won't be surprised. I want a main event with Sonata on a big stage, and I know we can fucking kill it.
I was about to say, because, like, this, you kept saying how, like, you have a lot of proving yourself to do from this G1, because the last G1, it was fuck everything, I'm going to do what I want to do. And now, like, I keep seeing it on Twitter, like, there's a lot of people who really are looking at you different as a wrestler after the Sonata match, because you can finally see Tama Tonga in a singles main event. You can visualize that now. Whereas, like, I always knew that you and Sonata had great chemistry in tag matches, but to have the singles match at the level you did was just fantastic. See, and
a lot of people, like, didn't realize that me going into a tag team that I have to, they're not considering that I have to share that position with a tag partner, right? So they forget that in a tag team relationship, that you're there to balance out that equation, that tag team. So I'm not going to go out for myself and try to make myself look great and kill my partner and dim his light. So, like, I think a lot of people just took it as, oh, Tama can't wrestle now because we don't see everything that he's capable of doing. So, and of course, 5 years is a long ass time not to be a singles competitor, but only 3 years in the G1, but still, it's a lot of time to be out of everybody's mind as a singles competitor. So G1 is a perfect spot for me to show what I can do and what I can provide for the other wrestlers. So yeah, to all those people that's talking online, that's all good. Everybody's got entitled to their opinion. That's cool. They can think I can wrestle, you know, whatever. That's fine. But as for myself, I've always known that I can do this. I've always known that I can, especially, look, I've been in Japan 10 motherfucking years, shit, plus, all right? They're not going to keep somebody that fucking sucks. All y'all can suck my...
that was going to be my next point, of the fact that, like, I think especially the schedule you've got right now is the perfect one to kind of prove people wrong. Because first you got Sonata, who, while yes, you haven't had a lot of singles matches with him, you've been in the ring with Sonata a ton. Like, you know Sonata, and Sonata knows you. And so you already know that's going to be a lot of fun. Your next match that's coming up, I believe on the 24th, is against Chase Owens, who, while you haven't had a guy who, while you haven't had a lot of matches against Chase Owens, you've been in the ring a lot with Chase Owens, and you sure as shit know Chase Owens pretty damn well. And so it's definitely going to be another case of two opponents that probably, I mean, look, I think you might pull out the win, but it's a case of two opponents who know each other probably too well for each other's, you know, best, you know what I mean? Like you guys know each other too well. Someone's going to pull out something sneaky. But
I would like to jump in on this. So like I watched a match with you and Sonata, and it was really amazing. And for anybody that thinks that you can't wrestle, it's stupid. Just because you're in a tag team doesn't mean you don't have the ability to be like a singles competitor. Like, they have to really watch your matches a little bit more harder and understand that, like, you're great with your brother in tag team matches. So like, if you know, obviously you're on your own singles run, like, now it's the time to be like, you know, he had it from the very beginning. I don't know why people always want to be like, Tama can't wrestle the singles. And it's like, he had it in tag team. You may not see it, but it's there, you know? But yeah.
Hey, Marie, you're welcome on this podcast anytime you want, all right? All right, you come on whenever you feel like it. We're going to put you in, we'll squeeze and win, all right?
I was going to say, I think this is the first time he's giving points. Usually he's taking the point. Marie, you're going to be on a Hall of Fame streak here.
Yeah, I mean, I watch, like, so personally, whenever I, like, watch matches, I watch it to make sure that I understand the in-ring storytelling ability. Maybe some outside interference. And I study the moves and like what they mean. Like, I do this a little bit more deeper than like the average casual fan. So I could definitely see that like Tama already had it. So like, I don't really have to go against Tama, and I'm not saying this to kiss his ass or anything like that. Like, Tama has talent. Sonata has talent. Everyone in the Bullet Club has talent. And it's kind of frustrating when fans are like, you know, sometimes they go against Bullet Club and it's like, they do the things that they do because they're good at it and they understand how to use the environment to their advantage. If they didn't, then they wouldn't be contracted with like New Japan for forever and like get these bookings and be up there. But like, I look at wrestling in a different way whenever I'm studying matches in order to like critique them and review them and give suggestions of like how to improve and stuff. Like, that's what I do. And that's why, like, you know, this match with Tama and Sonata are like really top notch.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I
don't want to stop you. I don't want to, you know, I'd like for you to keep on going, Marie. All right, but I'm gonna I gotta switch this over real quick, because I want to take this kind of highlight and highlight my next opponent, which is Chase Owens, which a lot of people I see online going down you know, going that same path on on Chase like they did with me. I think, like, if y'all seen Chase's indie work, man, independent work, the dude is phenomenal. The guy is smooth. I mean, so smooth. Even when you're watching him, the little things he does, like, you got to pay attention to see what he really does, his stepping, his timing, his smoothness. He's really athletic. I know he don't look like it, but he's really athletic. Yep. The man can go. And that, I believe, like, I know you guys are thinking that there's to be some tricks up the sleeves when we have our match together, but I really don't want that.
Yeah,
I really want to go and go on like, let's do this, Chase. Like, let's go pound for pound. You know, fuck all the bullshit, fuck all that shit. Let's, like, the games, the comedy, and all that. Like, people can keep that. They can keep this as a G1, and I think we need to really remind people who the fuck we are. And so that's the deal there. So, yeah, I'm going to fucking punch the shit out of Chase, but I want Chase to punch me back.
Oh, you know, man.
I want to feel that. So, yeah.
I'll be the cheerleader.
you heard it here first, folks. This Thursday is going to be a barn burner. Chase Owens, Tama Tonga, they're going to be smacking the hell out of each other. Nothing is going to be held back. But I'm glad we're kind of getting on this point, because Chase Owens had a fantastic match against Jeff Cobb, who, while he didn't win, Cobb's got so much momentum that the fight that he put up was immaculate. I mean, just the fact that he was able to even hobble Cobb a little bit on the role that he's been, fantastic for Chase. But also another Bullet Club member who I think gets the short end of the stick praise-wise, Yujiro Takahashi, beat Kota Ibushi. I'm going to say this again for anyone who might be sleeping on the G1 this year, don't know what exactly I'm saying here. Yujiro Takahashi, the Tokyo Pimp, in the first match of this year's G1 Climax, defeated the former IWGP World Champion, the two-time G1 Climax final, G1 Climax winner, Kota Ibushi. I'm not gonna lie. Like, yes, there was some shenanigans, but not like it, this was not, you know, everyone and their mother running down to the ring to stop Kota Ibushi. Yujiro pretty much just out wrestled the dude, dropped him with the pimp juice, and
no.
The big juice. I'm sorry. It's no longer the pimp juice. It is now forever the big juice. But yes, he dropped him with the big juice, and I mean, especially now that he's joined House of Torture, which, as English commentary keeps saying, is kind of all of Bullet Club's worst instincts kind of put into one. It does kind of feel like Yujiro has gotten that extra fire under him, you know, kind of like he did back in the No Limit days or in the early days of Bullet Club. It's gonna be very interesting. What'd you think of your boy Yujiro kind of busting everyone's brackets?
Number one. Surprised, but in a very good way. Like you said, it gives me No Limit vibes, man. And I'm with that. I'm with Yujiro. I think he's another guy that's like on me and Chase's panel right here, where we gotta remind motherfuckers who the fuck we are. That's what we gotta do.
And like all three of
y'all talking to.
You and Yujiro are pretty much at that same, like, y'all have been there for at least like a decade and a plus now, where it's like, it really is at the point where, like, they, trust me, New Japan has gotten rid of a ton of, they would have gotten rid of these guys if they didn't know what the fuck they were doing by now. Like,
these motherfuckers got us all fucked up. Wait, who the fuck y'all think you're talking to?
To be fair, I think that's mainly North American fans, because in North America, it is entirely possible for someone to just sit in a job they're not very good at for 10 years. Whereas in Japan, as in Japan, you actually have to, you know, deliver, and you actually have to, you know, be the guy you claim to be all 10 of those years.
Yeah, man, but I'm proud of Pimp Juice, man. It's the new finisher, the big juice. I like big that, juice. Man. BJ.
It's
the
character.
Yes.
That's what they say about those hot boys. They're going to drop you with the BJ, that's for sure.
Oh, my God.
Touche, Ross. Touche.
What can I say? I still have a little bit of that IO training. Those lion games are still in me. But yeah, no, House of Torture has having a very good tournament. Yujiro got a win. Evil got a win against Yoshihashi on night two. Like, it definitely and Sho has just been kicking the crap out of Young Lions on the opening matches. So like, House of Torture really showing out these early days of the G1 Climax. I got to talk about this because like originally I was like, oh yeah, these Young Lions are great. They're hungry. They're young. They've only been there for five matches. And now I'm at the point where I'm like, oh man, these guys have only been there for like five matches, and they're just throwing them in there with like Sho is like a rabid dog at this point. Like, he's ready to just destroy people. Like, he is vicious. And don't get me wrong, these new Young Lions are mean, but like, that you still can't be prepared for an angry, ready to just like destroy people Sho. And so these opening matches have been brutal, one-sided affairs that just. I feel bad for Oiwa. I feel bad for Fujita, but it's going to make them so much better. It's very much definitely iron sharpening iron. But oof, that snake bite submission is vicious. goddamn. But we would be remiss if we talked about the G1. We didn't talk about the big news coming out of night one. Apparently, Tetsuya Naito, two-time winner, former IWGP World Champion, and, I mean, one of the favorites this year to maybe make it to those finals, has apparently suffered a knee injury in his match with Zack Sabre Jr. and has been pulled from the entirety of the tournament. Naito is out of the running, which means that we're going to be getting a series of, like, all of his opponents are instead going to be basically either facing Yuji Nagata, Bushi, Hiromu Takahashi, or Satoshi Kojima. So it has where Naito has fallen, four have taken his place. Four people who I think could really use a showcase like this. Like Yuji Nagata has had a great year, especially representing New Japan on TNT. I think it's going to be great to see him get some showcase matches, especially since your brother Tongaloa is going to be able to take on Yuji Nagata. That has already captured people's attention. Like imaginations are running wild with that Haas fight's going to be like. But what do you think of the unfortunate news about Naito being pulled from the tournament?
Of course, that sucks. It sucks. Yeah. But I mean, this gives, like you just said, Tangaloa a chance to go against some, you know, legends. And I, you know, both of us don't have a lot of, or especially him, don't have a lot of singles under his belt. And the more experience he gets with these guys, man, the more, you know, the better off he is, the better he is at the end. So a lot of people's loss can be another man's gain. So that can be looked at like that.
Oh, no, absolutely. And especially, like I said, Nagata absolutely deserves to get the showcase. Kojima, another one who has been kind of running around North America, waving that New Japan flag wide and proud and really getting some new eyes. Like, as he said, after All Out, he apparently gained like 5,000 new followers, something like that. And that's 5,000 more eyes that are that much more focused on New Japan right now. So Kojima getting that showcase, Bushi and Hiromu Takahashi getting some showcases. What do you kind of think of this lineup that they're throwing at Naito's opponents, Marie?
It's really different. It's not names that you'll normally hear to probably be in the G1, but it's definitely going to be amazing matchups and stuff. I'm looking forward to whatever Nagata does, whatever Kojima does, Hiromu, and also Bushi. But I would like to say that I think LIJ is just cursed at this point.
Little bit like
Shingo. Shingo is fine, surprisingly, after having like a hellacious battle with Ishii. And then you have Sonata, which is like, you know, thankfully he's always in the back, so he's not like always injured. So it's like he's a good one. And then you have Hiromu coming back from an injury, and now you have Naito with an injury. I think Naito needs to take a vacation. And like really like stay home, because it's like it sounds like it happens every couple of months that something happens to LIJ, whether that's Hiromu or like Naito. Like he needs a vacation.
You're not wrong there. Like you've already said, Hiromu was injured. Shingo Takagi not only had a battle with Ishii, he battled COVID earlier in the year. Like he straight up got COVID. And so then you add Naito's injury, and Naito's knees have been a problem. Like, this is not the first knee injury Naito has suffered. Probably won't be the last, the way knee injuries tend to work. But it does kind of add to that question of, does there need to be a shakeup in LIJ? Because, like, how much longer is Naito going to be able to be that center figure when Shingo is running around with the world title, when Hiromu is kind of, he's got a little bit more of that I think spark than Naito does right now. I think especially with the way during Hiromu's injury where he was doing camera, he was on commentary, he was running out there and like running down the card to hype up the crowd. Like Hiromu really became a central focus of New Japan programming without even wrestling. And so it does feel like Naito might be getting eclipsed a little bit within his own faction. It's unfortunate. Like, I'll run through. Yep. No, it does make you wonder about LIJ. I will run through that schedule for folks that are just catching up on the Naito news. Tongaloa will be facing Nagata on the 26th, or on the 23rd. On the 26th, Nagata versus Takagi. On the 30th, Bushi versus Yujiro. On the October 3rd, you're going to have Bushi versus Toru Yano. On the October 7th, Hiromu Takahashi versus Kenta. On October 9th, Hiromu Takahashi versus Tomohiro Ishii. That's going to be insane. Then you've got October 13th, you've got Satoshi Kojima versus Kota Ibushi. And then October 18th, you've got Kojima versus Great Okan. And since we're talking about factions, I will throw in one other bit of faction news. Aussie Open, the team from Rev Pro has joined the United Empire. Will Ospreay apparently off in England doing a little bit of recruiting, and so they have added a tag team. A tag team you've in fact beaten, Tama. You've taken out Aussie Open at the I believe it was either Southern Showdown or Royal Quest. Don't quote me on that. I don't have the notes in front. Royal Quest. That's what it was. I knew it was. Mm-hmm. I had a feeling it was in England. But it's definitely more people that are very close to Osprey. Like you said, Fredo Kahn, when he was on Excursion, was in Rev Pro. Now Osprey going back into the Rev Pro. I believe they're the tag champions at the moment. And so, Marie, what do you kind of think of the addition of Aussie Open to the United Empire?
I don't know much about Aussie Open to give like a really good analysis or comment. It just felt like Osprey just wanted to grab two more guys to add on because, you know, we're still dealing with lockdowns on the rest of the side of the world and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's Osprey doing Osprey things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly. And it's
dumb things.
To be fair, this is one of the moves Osprey might be smart for, because this is a case where it feels like ever since the United Empire formed, I feel like I kept hearing people say, hey, Aussie Open would be cool with the United Empire. Like it was that kind of thing that would keep kind of bubbling. And so like, I don't even think Osprey can actually take credit for this decision. Cause like it really just feels like he was finally listening to someone online and finally got around to giving the people what they want. But we'll definitely see. Cause he's not only got Aussie Open, he's supposed to be adding one more member, this coming weekend in Dallas. He has been teasing names. All of those names that he's been teasing have been pissed off at him. Buddy Murphy told him to stop it. Chris Hero told him to straight up delete a tweet and stop pretending that he was and stop using his name for advertising. And so Osprey definitely stirring the pot, trying to get hype up for this new member.
He's taking a page out of my book. Okay, Osprey, little copycat ass. Look, come up with your own shit, Osprey. Don't be ripping off my page.
I do have to give him credit for the Chris Hero one, because Chris Hero is he seems like such a nice guy. He's usually a very amiable Twitter presence, and he just straight up was like, delete this, get my name out of your mouth, I don't want my fans thinking, like, well, he really got under Chris Hero's skin.
Well, I can confirm that Chris Hero is a very nice person in person.
He's pretty cool. I was surprised to see that tweet from him. And I was like, oh shit, Osprey would piss off somebody that's really freaking nice. I was like, damn, bro.
Who else but Osprey?
Right?
Like I said, Osprey stirring shit in the States and in the UK.
Shit spray.
Jeff Cobb and Great O'Conn running over stuff in the G1. The G1 Climax will be continuing this coming Thursday, the 23rd, the 24th, with A Block and B Block set to show off their stuff. Marie, before we start to wrap it up here, where can people find you online? Where if you want them to find you, I always have to add that caveat. If you want people to find you, where can they find you?
I always want people to find me. I'm Marie Shadows. I'm the host and the creator of the Square Circle podcast that covers AEW, New Japan Pro Wrestling, Impact Wrestling, and even my WWE days back in the day. And I also have my youtube.com/Square Circle Podcast for practice commentary matches and vlogs for all of that. For the podcast site, anchor.fm/Square Circle Podcast. And also, if you want to find me on Twitter, @Marie_Shadows, and you want to take it a step further with my own Patreon, patreon.com/Marie Shadows, because together we're making wrestling memories.
Hell yeah. I got a question, Marie. Got a question. What you said your old WWE days. What'd you do in your old WWE days?
In 2018, I was part of the WWE Network Logger Department.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, you actually popped up on my newsfeed a couple times this past, because you finally decided to start spilling a little bit of the tea from your days at WWE. Apparently the rules for what was allowed on the network would change like week by week. I'm not gonna make like I want people to kind of find this, but go give us a little bit of the long and the short of that.
All right, so the short story is that week one, you kind of go in and they're like, hey, this is what we're going to be doing. You're watching WWE programming 5 days a week, 8-hour days. I basically had to make the SEO stronger for you guys to like search properly on the WWE network. So, you know, Chris Benoit's a touchy subject.
Yep.
So just imagine being told 1 week, yes. Next week, no. Next week, yes. Next week, no. And then the following week, like, fuck it. That's it. Like, supervisor will take care of it. Don't worry about it. We'll handle it all. That's basically what I had to deal with, like, week one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Damn. Oof. Yeah, that sounds, I mean, especially with the, like, the amount of content that you would have to go through, that weekly, that changing weekly must have been a nightmare. We'll have to get you back on when it's a less busy news week, so we can really dive deep.
I got that Bullet Club story.
I like spilling the tea here. Let's spill tea.
Yeah. I got that Bullet Club story.
Oh, yeah?
Oh?
Yeah.
Oh?
Well, we got time.
Yeah, we got time. You sure you don't want, like, another
time? Oh, I got it. We got a lot
Jesus.
Of time.
Jesus. Jesus.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So, this was when we started to go into WCW now. We were doing like WCW Thunder. We were all together in this room with my coworkers and even, you know, my former bosses and stuff. So on the screen, we had NWO. They come out. It's like Hogan and Bischoff and like everybody else. And so, you know, NWO throws up the two sweet like everyone does. Right. So one of my coworkers says, oh, so they stole it. At this time, it's basically like the Young Bucks. So we were talking about the Young Bucks, and everybody in America knows more about the Young Bucks than they do about like stuff in New Japan. So me, I gave him the side eye and I was like, really? So my boss, who's Adam number two, was like, yeah, like not even a second thought. He was just like, yeah, they stole it. Me, I was like, hold up. First of all, Kevin Nash said in an interview that the Young Bucks were okay to use the two sweet signs. So, you know, that's okay. To where the boss rebuttals me and says, you can't tell Marie anything because she's a Young Bucks fan. Granted, I bought the Young Bucks book bag, the one that says Elite, we run the world, to work every day. I brought that book bag to work every day. And that's what
Why you worked at WWE? You did that?
I did that. I did that. I brought that Bullet Club book bag with me.
Oh, no.
I gotta salute you on that one. I'm raising.
Oh, holy shit!
I'm raising a Red Bull to that. Cheers.
So after he rebuttals me with that, I give him the side eye. If it wasn't for my coworker was like, Marie, do not shoot on him. Do not say another word. and I held my tongue, and I was like, oh, this guy.
Damn. Okay, Marie. All right, you did it. Okay. You got some balls.
I have the biggest balls out of everyone, man. Like, I will talk shit about whoever I want. Like, you know, like the thing is that like I love professional wrestling. I don't pick a side on like, you know, who loves like what I love more. I love it all. But I was not gonna sit there at WWE and drink the WWE Kool-Aid.
Yep.
I was not doing that.
Oh, love it. Love it. You got balls the size of Nicki Minaj's cousin's friend.
But, all right.
And if we're gonna get real historical about the two sweet, Kevin Nash and all them stole it from like the Albanians or like the Bulgarians or something like
it's
that.
Like, it's like a mafia. It's like a mafia sign, right? Yeah.
Exactly. So it's everything's stolen. Everything's new again. Yeah. Everything can do whatever. But
I just didn't like that mentality of like, yeah, they stole it. Like, no, dude. Like, it's a universal sign. Everybody loves throwing up a two sweet.
Oh, it's like the middle finger, man. Everybody does.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah.
You know. That's it.
All right.
To love it. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Like I said, we're going to have to get Marie back when we've got a less busy news week. Tama, where can people find you if you want them to find you?
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter, Tama_Tonga. You can find me on Instagram, the good bad guy, Tama Tonga. Even on TikTok, Tama Tonga 1111. You can find me on there. And Russ, where can they find you, man?
At Ross W. Berman IV on Twitter, Ross Berman IV on Instagram, RossBerman.bandcamp for all my music, and I got all the G1 results, standings, and coverage over at WrestleZone.com. So head on over there to get what you need.
Nice, guys. Ross, thank you very much. We're going to wrap it up there. Marie, thank you again for joining us on this this week's Thomas Island podcast. Guys on Twitch, everybody on the Twitch chat, thank you. We see your question. Before we close off, we got one question here from PK the Pipes. He said he's curious about Loa's face paint and control of your narrative connection. Can you speak on that? Yes, I'll speak on it real quick. I don't know. I don't know anything. I'm as surprised as you, PK. Now the days are split here, PK, in Japan. So like the first day is only A block, and then the second day is B block. Now they separated this, the whole COVID, we have this, the whole situation. So I don't see him at all. Okay. Like, so like buses, days, whatnot. So I was as surprised as you to see that shirt. And I just thought it was a shirt that it was his. I didn't know it was EC3's. But control your narrative. And then the face paint, I think that's his face paint from back when we were running together. He has like three lines going down his face. So that's all I can say about that. But the control your narrative, I don't know. Maybe he's joining ROH. I don't know. We'll see.
To be fair, control your narrative it's not within ROH. It's EC3's own specific like brand and format. I know they are going to be doing another Free the Narrative that's supposed to come out at some point. So, but... I mean, based on the last one I saw, he'd be a great fit for it.
Oh, yeah. And they have history together. They used to be tag partners in NXT. They used to run together. So, you know, maybe he's recruiting some of the Bullet Club. I don't know how he's doing that. But I don't know. Maybe he's getting recruited over there to ROH with EC3.
Well, and this is
controlling his narrative somehow.
Yeah. No, and this is why I wanted to clarify, because like controlling narrative, it's not a stable, it's not a promotion. It's literally like, it's basically like if Tongaloa was attending like a life coach class outside of NJP, like that. It's kind of that kind of hybrid where it's partially about wrestling, but it's partially about helping people who want to figure out who they are as a character, as a wrestler, like really it really is like that, taking control of your narrative in wrestling, which is why, again, I said he'd be, especially if he's coming back to singles competition, it's a perfect place for him to kind of like figure some stuff out and try and come back strong.
Well, there you go. PK the Pipes, thank you very much for the Twitch chat. You guys, Ross, thank you. Marie, thank you again. You guys enjoy your week. Stay safe. Stay out of the news. Keep your opinions to yourself. Don't burn your bridge. All right. No, I'm kidding. Enjoy your week, guys. Stay safe. We'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.
Thank you for listening to this week's Thomas Island. Find more great Thomas Island content like the Shotgun series, weekly happy hour Zoom calls with Tama, video versions of the podcast, and much, much more at patreon.com/Thomas Island. And visit at Thomas Island on Instagram and Twitter.